All right, then, we're turning our attention for a second time to Matthew chapter 19, verses 3 through 12. We will finish Matthew 19 this morning. It is the heart of all the terrible problems that we've suffered throughout centuries of these difficulties over marriage and divorce and remarriage. And then we'll finish up our class by returning to 1 Corinthians, where it was born, and be looking then in probably three lessons. I've never been able to teach it in less than three of 1 Corinthians chapter 7. So my hope has been that by plumbing the depths of the Old Testament particularly, that when we do get back to 1 Corinthians, we'll see in chapter 7, everything is same. What I've been building to, I think you'll see it this morning, particularly in Matthew 19, and is that Moses didn't teach a thing in the world different on marriage, divorce, and remarriage than Abraham believed or Adam believed. God did not change his marital law for the Jews when Abraham was selected to be the father of many nations. From Abraham to Moses, Moses didn't change anything. From Moses to Christ, Christ didn't change anything. And now, down to this day, God never changed his marital laws. God loves you women. And I guess if there's an overarching consideration, I'd want to leave with everybody. God really does love you. And he would never sacrifice you because your husbands were evil men who just wanted to ditch you. So God would say, okay, for 1,500 years, we're going to let you divorce your wives. And so you Jews alone, not the Gentiles, not, you know, those who are non-Jews, but for 1,500 years under the law, we're going to have easy divorce. We're going to allow divorce for less than sexual crime. We're going to allow divorce for less than sexual sin. I used to believe that. I taught that. I counseled that. I know a lot of people still do. I believe I had a good conscience, an honest heart when I did, but I was mistaken. And so I've been appealing now for about 23 years for people to recognize that, you know, when you see a better way, when you see a clearer way, when you see a way that does not accuse God of being fickle, that does not accuse God of changing his law in deference to sinful man, that does not see God forsaking the wives and children for 1,500 years just because men were rebelling against him. You know, when you see that all Jesus was doing was offering an inspired commentary on Deuteronomy 24, or else he never answered the Pharisees' questions at all, which would make him a pretty poor teacher, you'll see then that there's a harmony in Scripture from the garden to today and to the last day. The covenant that is marriage has been held sacred by God. He has never given anybody a pass to forsake it for less than a sexual crime on the part of the mate. So, last week, we first read it. I think we'd be wise to do it again this evening. All I've done with the shaded areas is to weave in the unique material from Mark chapter 10. We have two Gospels that record this exchange between Jesus and the Pharisees. So, by weaving both together, you know, you see it all. Some Pharisees came up to Jesus, testing him, began to question him whether it was lawful for a man to divorce a wife, asking, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason at all? And he answered and said to them, what did Moses command you? They said, Moses permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce and send her away. So they argued to Jesus, the law says, and they're quoting Deuteronomy 24:1, we may indeed divorce our wives for any reason we want, any reason at all. Any reason other than adultery is good enough. We believe Genesis 24 teaches that. And they've come to trap him. If they can get him to say, no, Moses said it's only for adultery, then they've got him right where they want him. These are the power brokers of the day. They can declare he is contradicting Moses, and they would be right. They think it's for any reason at all. I used to think the Pharisees were right. I agreed with them. Jesus should have said, yes, you're correct. Moses allowed you to divorce your wives for any reason at all. But I, Jesus, am going to tell you something different. Now, I don't think so. Now, I think they were wrong. They should never have argued that way. Jesus did not agree with them. And Moses never said you can divorce your wife for something less than adultery. Let's see how. In verse 4, he answered and said, have you not read that God, He who created them from the beginning of creation made them male and female and said, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate. Now, brothers, as we watch this develop, I think it's abundantly plain. Most people would agree. The Pharisees understood what he said. And what he said was, you guys are separating from your wives for any reason at all. And you've got no right to do that. You have no excuse out of Moses. You'll get none from me because I, Jesus, agree with Moses. So stop that. Then, in the verse 7 in Matthew, they said to him, why then did Moses command to give her a certificate of divorce and send her away? We've got you, Jesus. You're dead wrong. There can't be any other reason. The certificate of divorce is for less than adultery. Jesus' response in verse 8. Because of your hardness of heart, Moses wrote you this commandment and permitted you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, it has not been this way. I'm going to spend quite a bit of time in this class trying to figure out what is the way that God has never allowed from the beginning. Never was it ever authorized. Never was it ever permitted. Never was it ever legal. There is some way in verse 8 that God absolutely never permitted for one second in the history of the world. I used to think somehow that that was Moses' law we were talking about here. And it occurs to me now that maybe Moses' law had been a God-ordained way for 1,500 years. So it's kind of problematic to think that Jesus is saying, from the beginning, there's been this way that has never been. And then I'm talking about Moses' law, which was God's way for 1,500 years. I'm thinking now we should be looking for some other way that was not permitted from the beginning. And I believe what it is the one he's already twice told them. You may not divorce your wives for any reason at all. It's never been this way. It's never been your way. God will not have it, did not have it. It's never been allowed. So in verse 9, I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for fornication and marries another woman commits adultery. That's been true since Adam. That was true from Adam to Abraham. It was true when God set up the Jewish nation from Abraham to Moses. It was true from Moses to Christ. It was true from Christ to Paul. And it's true from Paul to now. Whoever divorces his wife, except for fornication, is exactly what Deuteronomy 24 says. When it says, you can divorce her for a matter of nakedness. Jesus did not agree with the Pharisees. He did not think Moses taught that you could send a wife away for any old reason. He is correcting the Pharisees' misinterpretation of Moses' law in the only passage that's under consideration, Deuteronomy 24. Mark alone will add, in the house, the disciples began questioning him about this again. And he said to them, whoever divorces his wife and marries another woman commits adultery against her. And if she herself divorces her husband and marries another man, she's committing adultery. Now, Mark put it that way. What is conspicuously missing from Mark's statement? The exception clause. We know the exception clause is there in Deuteronomy 24, and we know that Jesus cited it in Matthew 19. But now, in the house, it's a second time. This is recorded only by Mark, so let no one think that there is no exception. If this was all you had, and a lot of people think it is, they lay the exception aside. They don't believe you can divorce for adultery. They take this instead as the operative statement, and they therefore set up a conflict now, not even between Jesus and Moses, which would be a sin on Jesus' part, said he would never do it in Matthew 5. But, you know, they set up a contradiction between Jesus and Jesus. So the fact that this passage does not have the exception does not mean that no exception exists. Deuteronomy says you can divorce a wife who commits adultery. Jesus said you can divorce a wife who commits adultery. But if you divorce a wife for anything other than that, like the Pharisees were constantly arguing and practicing, then you're in violation of Moses' law, you Jews who are under that law. Verse 10, the disciples said to him, it's a relationship of the man with his wife's like this, it's better not to marry. And I suppose it was a shock. Because, brethren, the liberals will always be more than the conservatives. That's just the way of the world. Liberal thinking always has more adherents. It's easier. So, in the great controversy of their day, and I told you before, I've read the Babylonian Talmud. The tractate is Gittin number 90. You can see it for yourself. Hillel and Shammai in Jesus' day had developed two followings among the Jews. It was as hotly contested then as it has been in our own nation in recent years. And so, one of those men was right, and one of those men was wrong. The conservative had a smaller following, I'm sure, and he wasn't being followed by the Pharisees. The Pharisees had the power and their hands around the necks of the Jews, and they believed you could divorce for any reason at all. So that's what they taught. And that was pretty popular doctrine, to say the least. We Jews can divorce our wives anytime we want. She didn't have to commit adultery. Burn the toast as part of that Babylonian tractate. So, you know, the disciples said, well, you know, you're taking away a right. You're teaching something other than Moses did. And what you're saying is, we can't divorce our wives for any reason at all. And well, if that's the case, we can't just shed them when we want. Well, you know, it's pretty serious. Better not to marry. And of course, you know already, 1 Corinthians 7, Paul will say, exactly, that's absolutely correct. You'll be happier if you don't get married. It'll secure undistracted devotion. You'll have less cares in the world. So it's true. It's better not to marry. Paul will say so. Jesus is saying so. Moses would say so. Abraham would say so. Adam would say so. If what? If you can. He said to them, not all men can accept this statement, but only those to whom it has been given. It's true for Paul in 1 Corinthians 7. It's true here in the law. Not anybody can just say, okay, I'll not have sex. I won't ever think about it again. I have all kinds of self-discipline. Why, I've got Paul's gift. When we get to 1 Corinthians 7, we'll find out it's a gift from God. You either have or you don't. And if you don't, then you won't fit into the category of those to whom this command, it's better not to marry, has been given. And here's the three. There are eunuchs who were born that way from their mother's womb. There are eunuchs who were made eunuchs by men. There are also eunuchs who made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. He's able to accept this. Let him accept it. Well, brethren, I'm telling you what. Just get real personal here. I refuse to accept that. That's why I got married. There's a multitude of reasons why people get married. But the premier one that we're talking about here is the fact that there's only three kinds of guys who will not be pretty strongly, you know, in favor of marriage for obvious reasons. And if you can't accept it, you can't accept it. You don't have Paul's gift. So God created this thing called marriage. It has reasons for existing, not the least of which is that the two become one flesh. Now, I pointed out that in the great war that's been fought among us, you know, I mean, against each other, the Civil War that's been going on now in our century, went in the previous century and the one before that, and was going on 2,000 years ago, has six decisions. It's got about 26, but I'm focusing on six only. Six where people diverge and contest what's the proper interpretation. You just watch the Pharisees use one of them. So we have to work through these six things. Did you notice in your studies, five out of the six revolve around properly interpreting Deuteronomy 24? This is why I went back to Deuteronomy. This is why I spent so much time with Moses' law. We have destroyed ourselves, not to mention quite a few churches and quite a few marriages, and therefore the wives and children, because we didn't understand Deuteronomy 24 any better than the Pharisees did. So for years, I thought the Pharisees heresiac interpretation of Deuteronomy 24, which allows you to divorce your wife for any reason at all, and she doesn't have to commit adultery for any reason at all, was right. Pharisees are right. I agree. That's what Moses taught. Now I've come to see five times out of the five times we're talking about Deuteronomy, the Pharisees are wrong. I was wrong. Jesus was correcting the Pharisees because they were wrong in their five ways interpretation of Deuteronomy 24. So what Jesus then did, as I used it extensively last week, he then refers to the quotations from Deuteronomy 24 that the Pharisees are citing, but in order to answer the question what it means, he is required to use different words. The words that are in Deuteronomy were subject to two interpretations, hence the division. Jesus' paraphrase of Deuteronomy 24 removes one of those possibilities and seals it. Which way is the proper way to understand it? So last week I used the word paraphrase when we were working with that material. This week I want to strengthen that. He's not just paraphrasing it, he's interpreting it. Now, a proper paraphrase is not changing the meaning. A proper paraphrase explains and clarifies the meaning. What Jesus does in Matthew 19 is answer the Pharisees' question. He says, you're wrong. He doesn't dodge their question and say, 3 or 4 months from now, I'm going to set up Christianity. That's not what he's doing. He's not ignoring their question. He's not deceiving, tricking, in any way. He's not leaving them wondering what he's talking about. He is honestly approaching the question. I, Jesus, will tell you what Deuteronomy 24 means. So, here it is. Deuteronomy 24 says, when a man takes a wife and marries her, and it happens she finds no favor in his eyes because he's found some, and every one of those Pharisees knew what that word was. He's found nakedness in her. He's found a matter of nakedness in her. He has caught her in a nakedness. So, a man marries her, happens that he catches her. And when he does, she finds no favor in his eyes. Why? Because she's an adulteress. Because she's committing fornication. That's what she's doing. She's not burning the toast. You don't word nakedness for burning the toast. It's not the word you use. So, he finds a matter of nakedness in her. That's why she finds no favor in his eyes. He writes her a certificate of divorce. He puts it in her hand. He sends her out of his house. Perfectly legal. That's exactly what he has every right to do. God's not mad about it. God's not grieving over it. God is permitting it. Verse 2. She leaves his house and goes and becomes another man's wife. God wishes there had been no divorce, wishes she hadn't committed adultery. But she's perfectly free to marry another man. The problem is apparently she hasn't got the gift either, does she? She hasn't got Paul's gift, it's pretty apparent. So if we're going to prevent sin in 1 Corinthians 7, you look for it when we get there next week. What do you do? Well, let each woman have her own husband. Is it forever banish her from sexual activity because she made a sexual sin? Brethren, this would be like saying, you guys, you ever steal a sheep? You're forever banned from being a shepherd. That's the end of it. What's ridiculous? You don't see that in anything else in the law. You don't see that in Christianity. You don't lose your right to marriage because you have violated the marriage. You don't lose your right to ownership because you stole something. You don't lose your rights blanket in every conceivable way because you committed a sin in any particular given area. You have to repent. You can be forgiven if you do. And then you get on with your life. It is a doctrine of demons to forbid marriage. And I got into that business. I'm really ashamed of it now. So for a while, just like I thought the Pharisees were right, I thought the demons were right. There are certain people who must be forbidden to marry. And they are the 50% or more of the American population that's been through a divorce that was, incorrect, less than adultery. excuse me, or if you are guilty of the adultery, well then too, you have to lose your right to get married. That's a whole lot of supposition. And there isn't any of it in the mouth of Jesus the Christ. She's perfectly free to marry another man, and so she did. In fact, because in verse 3, if the latter husband... Now remember, of course, they're not married. They don't think they are. He thinks he's her husband, but he really isn't. That's the way it's been explained. That's the way our debates have gone. That's what I believe. You only think you are. So when he says that's a husband and a wife there, you know, you shouldn't think that. You know, we know better. So they're not really married. They just think they're married. And we used to teach you shouldn't add to Scripture. We used to teach the context ought to tell you what, you know, the words mean. And I thought I did all the years that I thought and taught. They only think they're married. They're not really. If the latter husband turns against her, he's a husband. Now I think they were married. Now I think they were divorced and she married because God said it was okay. Then puts it in her hand, sends her out of his house. Or if the latter husband dies, who took her to be his wife, then her former husband who sent her away because she committed adultery, found a matter of nakedness, that's why he hardened his heart against her, is not allowed to take her again to be his wife since she's been defiled. She's had another man. For that is an abomination before the Lord. You shall not bring sin on the land which the Lord your God gives you as an inheritance. She committed adultery. He hardened his heart against her. So Moses said, because God allowed it, you may divorce her. You don't have to. He could have kept her. Maybe she just messed up. Maybe she's the most repentant woman the world's ever seen. Maybe she convinces him she's sorry. Maybe she doesn't want to lose her husband, her family, or kids. Well, he could forgive her. He doesn't have to divorce her. But he has the right. If his heart is so hardened, he does not ever want to be one flesh with that woman again. And in as many cases as not, brethren, you're married, pardon my, you know, language here, but you're married to the whore of the Old Testament. You're married to the harlot. She's unrepentant. She's catting around town everywhere. Now how's your heart feel about her? Well, my heart would get pretty hard against a woman that I've caught in a matter of nakedness three times. Four, five, has got a reputation for it around town. And I have to keep her? No. I've discovered a matter of nakedness in her. But I don't have the witnesses. Can't take her before the court and put her to death. So I can divorce her. As soon as I give her a certificate of divorce, the whole world knows that she's a card-carrying adulteress. That's why I've divorced her. Here's the paperwork, lady. Now, if anybody wants to marry you, that's their problem. Not a very smart guy, probably, but it gets done. So, well, but then that second guy dies. Can't go back. Husband better make up his mind. You give her a certificate of divorce because she's an adulteress, you cannot take her back. That is sin. That is an abominable sin. It is an abomination that you are never to do if you're a Jew. Later, we're going to require it under Christianity, but for now, it's an abomination. And you say, I get facetious. I used to believe that. And so I pummel myself with these kinds of words, reminding myself, you better be really careful before you go and devote yourself to teaching the doctrine of demons, forbidding marriage. You know, you better get it right. Well, I made some mistakes. I have repented. I'm sorry for it now. But brethren, this passage does not allow easy divorce. Now, let me give you an illustration while we're here. I don't want to have time to develop it at all. I'm determined to go extremely fast now, so we're just skipping over loads of stuff. But look, if you marry a wife and you don't like her, whether she's an adulteress or not, so you put a bullet in her brain pan, do you lose your right to marry? No. You killed her, and that's why you're free to marry. But if you murder your wife, can you still marry another one? Well, sure you can. You don't lose marital rights for some other sin. You don't lose marital rights because you commit adultery. You don't lose marital rights because you commit murder. That doesn't mean that God is saying, go ahead and commit adultery or commit murder. You got other and worse problems if you read your Bible that way. The Pharisees did, and I quit believing them. So look, it's terrible. It's a tragedy. But when Jesus interprets Deuteronomy, he interprets it this way. Deuteronomy 24:1 says, she finds no favor in his eyes. Matthew says, you harden your heart. Jesus said, you harden your heart. She finds no favor. You harden your heart. That is also because you found indecency is a horrible translation. I criticize every translation there is. When the King James Version came up with pastor and used a Latin word instead of an English, that's just wrong. And everybody knows it. Nobody, you know, gets upset with me when I do that. Sometimes translators make mistakes. I didn't spend 5 years of my life studying Greek so that I could forget about it. Sometimes knowing the language will help. In this language of the Old Testament, in the Hebrew, the word is nakedness. So, when he finds a matter of nakedness in her, in Matthew 19, Jesus says, except for fornication, they're one and the same. You can divorce a wife in Deuteronomy 24 for one reason. She's guilty of a matter of nakedness. Not because she burnt the toast. Not because you concocted a million reasons. Not because of incompatibility. Not for anything other than fornication. So, nakedness, fornication, immorality, indecency, in both these passages are Jesus answering the question. You Pharisees are wrong. I could prove it by telling you what Deuteronomy 24 means, Jesus says. So sure, Moses allowed you to divorce an adulterous wife. You harden your heart toward her, then you can divorce her. Why? Because you found a matter of sexual indecency in her. Now bear in mind, we did this in Leviticus. We've been doing this in Deuteronomy. For those of you who have been in the other class, I hope it's been especially helpful to see the numerous tie-ins here. You know, I've come to think that the view I have is pretty ironclad because I finally went and read all the rest of the material about this subject of marriage, divorce, particularly sexual sins. In the chart I've handed out before, there are 33 sexual sins in the Old Testament. They are found in Exodus, Leviticus, in Deuteronomy, and every one of them's on that chart. 10 of those carry the death penalty. They're highlighted in gray. Nakedness is used 20 times in the list of sexual crimes. And Deuteronomy 24:1 is one of them. And that had been the law for 39 years before Moses said in the plains of Moab that if you harden your heart against your wife because you found a matter of indecency, nakedness, fornication, harlotry, depending on your translation, in her, you know, then you can divorce her. She's got a certificate, so she can remarry, and you can't have her back even if that husband dies. That's what Jesus taught in perfect harmony with a list of sexual sins, for any one of which you might divorce a wife if you catch her in it, but there aren't other witnesses. You can divorce her. It's a capital offense. If you got witnesses, you can kill her, but not unless you got the witnesses. So here are the points of divergence. In 19:6, does the phrase, let no man separate, mean it is impossible to separate, or does it mean stop separating? It means stop separating. They were doing it. They were arguing for it. They were divorcing their wives for less than fornication, less than adultery. Jesus says, cut it out. He says, stop divorcing your wives. You can and you are, so don't. This is what he meant when he interpreted 19:6. And after all, brethren, I don't know why I never had, stop to think. Why would God ever forbid a thing that's impossible to do? If I'm supposed to understand this phrase as, let no man separate means it can't be done, it never has been done, It's God's providence and not yours, and so we'll just add the words to the Bible and have no fear about it. We'll just write them in there in our mind's eye. You only think you're separated. You only think you're divorced. You only think that you've remarried. You're not really divorced and you're not really married. You don't really have husbands and wives here. Those are the words used in all the passages. You just think so because it's impossible for you to divorce your wife. Why would God forbid the impossible? Listen, you sinners, it is a rank sin, any one of you, to flap your arms and fly. I forbid it. How silly is that? Well, I just wasn't catching it. You can't do it. God doesn't go out of his way to prohibit it, to tell you you shouldn't. It's because you can separate, your word for divorce, it is because you can divorce for less than adultery that you should not. Number two, in 19:8, is the hardness of heart directed toward God or an adulterous wife? Now, I don't think I'll live long enough, nor do I think probably there is a historical record that I could find to answer this question. But I really am dying to know who started that idea that it's the hardness of heart toward God. Where in the world did that come from? I have no idea how it got started. But, brethren, it is unbelievably false. It's just not so. And we've been studying Leviticus. We've been studying Deuteronomy. You can study your whole Old Testament stem to stern. God doesn't change his laws because somebody hardens their heart against him. So he says, okay, you don't want to serve me my way. I'll let you serve me your way. Never has. The hardness of heart is not toward God. It's toward the adulterous wife, as I just showed you the side-by-side paraphrasing, which is interpreting in the parallel chart that you just saw a few minutes ago. Certainly, brethren, it's toward the wife, not toward God. What am I supposed to do? I walked in, my wife's in bed with another guy. What am I supposed to do? I can't put her to death. What am I supposed to do? You might think that that happens, you know, more than once in a world's history. And they wanted to know. And so God told them. It's toward the wife. God doesn't cave in to rebellious man's sin. How else would a man feel toward an adulterous wife? He hardens his heart toward her. And that's how Jesus interpreted Deuteronomy 24. So, brother, really, you know, I just missed it. For 2 decades, I missed it. I followed, you know, what I was taught, and then I started thinking about it. Number three, in 19:8, is there hardness of heart in Deuteronomy 24? And I always acted as if there wasn't. It just wasn't mentioned that Jesus was interpreting Deuteronomy 24 by adding an element that you cannot read in the passage, that you could not know about until Jesus says, Moses let you divorce your wives because you'd hardened your heart against God. But there's no hardening of their hearts against God before, Deuteronomy 24. There's no hardening of their hearts after Deuteronomy 24 toward God. Where anywhere is there a hardening of heart toward God? And I used to think, well, it just wasn't. Jesus explained what they never knew for 1,500 years. That the reason God gave them that pass, you can divorce your wives for any reason you want, is because God saw you didn't love him anymore. You didn't want to serve him anymore. You had hardened your heart toward God. And so therefore God said, well, okay, if you want to harden your heart toward me, then I will change and let you have your sinful way. 1,500 years. And then I'm going to change it again. That's not a very trustworthy God. That's not an impartial God. That's not a fair God because he's making the wives pay the price. It's not hardness of heart toward God. It's hardness of heart toward the wife. Yes, there is hardness of heart. It's defined as finding no favor in his eyes. And it's written right there in Deuteronomy 24. And I thought, no. The hardness of hearts toward God, toward God, toward God. And I just ignored the pronoun. She finds no favor in his eyes. Jesus interprets with a paraphrase in Matthew 19, finds no favor in his eyes as hardens his heart. In 19:8 is the phrase, permitted you to divorce your wives an unencumbered authorization. Or is it a begrudging concession? For years I thought, well, God really didn't like it, but he could see they didn't want to serve him. They'd hardened their hearts against him, you know, and God felt really bad about it. But, you know, well, all right, I'll let you do it. You know, and you wives, I'm sorry for you, you know, but I'm going to let the guys do this. They don't want to serve me. So you wives, just get ready. If you ever marry, you can be divorced for any reason at all. Any reason at all. 1,500 years, and Jews only, but for any reason at all. But brethren, it's not God's unwilling concession. What it is an unencumbered authorization. The suffered in the King James Version, I think, is where this got started. And I think this is where it got started. The suffered in the King James Version in English today makes us think you're enduring something that you really wish would go away. So you don't want it at all, but you're suffering it. You know, and so I bear up under it because I'm suffering while it's being done. A brother, now it's great in 1611. They knew what they meant. But in our culture, it's come to mean this idea of enduring a thing you don't like, want, or allow. But look, in John 19:38, that same word is used. Joseph besought Pilate to take Jesus' body. Pilate said, "Oh, well, I really don't want you to, but you know, you guys have hardened your heart against me, so I guess I'll let you have Jesus' body." Okay, you know, I wish I had more power. I wish I could stand up on my own 2 feet and tell you no, but you know, here I am, and so I guess I'll let you do it. No! Brethren, in Acts 21, 39 and 40, Paul says, "Allow me to speak to the people." Okay? And then, you know, centurion says, "Well, I really don't want to, and you know, I don't think I should, and you know, I wish you wouldn't, and you know, and here, you know, 1,500 years from now, I won't, but today, I guess I'll let you do it." He had a riot on his hands. He was trying to put an end to the riot. Here's probably, you know, the clearest one. Julius in Acts 27:3 treated Paul with consideration. With what? Consideration. Julius treated Paul with consideration and allowed him to go to his friends. "Well, I really don't want to. Wish you wouldn't, you know, but I have to let you do it because after all, you've hardened your heart against me, Paul, so I'm going to let you do it, you know, even though I don't like it. I don't want to." Number five. In 19:8, is from the beginning it has not been this way, Moses' way, or some other way. It is the Pharisees' way. This whole discussion is Moses versus the Pharisees. Pharisees, with their hard hearts, rejecting their Messiah. These men want to divorce their wives for any cause at all. I don't deny they've hardened their heart against God. What I'm questioning is whether or not God says, "Well, okay, since you've done that, you know, then I'll let you kill Jesus and we'll keep him in the grave." No. This discussion is not about God yielding to man's rebellion. It's about Jesus straightening out the Pharisees who were contradicting Moses. Whatever way we're talking about here, brethren, has never been God's way. It has never been this way. From the beginning, it has not been this way. I'm standing here now, Jesus says, and from the beginning, it has not been this way. And I thought, well, it has been the way for the last 1,500 years. I'm making a big mistake there. Moses' way had been the way for 1,500 years, so it can't be the way that has not been the way since the garden. The only way that had not been the way from the beginning is the Pharisees' way. And brethren, this is where finally I got serious. And so instead of kind of following the herd like I did for 20 plus years, really good people, they meant well, they're honest people, they had good hearts. I'm not faulting the men or their minds because I believed them. I was honest too. Now finally, I got really serious. I talked to the department head of the Greek in one of our colleges. I talked to a natural born Greek. I went to another professor. I've sought out other sources. And my point is that when it says, "From the beginning it has not been this way," this phrase, "this way," confirmed by every living authority, could be the Pharisees' question back in verse 3. It's never been that way. Now, I don't have time, I know. You know, you got to go so fast. But look, brethren. You know, what messed us up here, I think, is we always said, well, pronouns are representative of the closest antecedent noun. And that sounds real good and powerful. So from the beginning, it has not been that way. Well, there's the pronoun. We're going to look back for the closest thing. And Moses is being talked about. So the way that it is, you know, has to be Moses' way. Our problem is that's not what the law of pronouns is. The law of pronouns is, pronoun represents a noun, usually the closest antecedent, unless something in the context says differently. And as often as not, there's plenty in the context that says differently. And there's everything in this context that says differently. The way that has not been from the beginning, it's not Moses' way, it's the Pharisees' way. So, it has not been from the beginning that you could divorce your wives for any cause at all. That's why I just told you to stop it. Last one. In 19:9, is there fornication in Deuteronomy 24:1? And I used to think not. I've watched leading debaters among us. I've flown to other states carrying recording equipment so I could watch those debates and then distribute them across the country. Is there fornication in Deuteronomy? And the great debaters among us were saying, no, there's no fornication in Deuteronomy. It's anything less than fornication. It's a pass to divorce your wife for any reason at all. No fornication in Deuteronomy 24. Well, then what's the matter of nakedness? Burning toast. Well, burning all sounded good. And I'm telling you, they're better charts than I am. They've made hundreds of them. But they're wrong, as the Pharisees were wrong. Jesus is an inspired teacher of Moses' law. Before the cross, under that law, in coming to keep that law, who said he was not going to annul a single law while he was talking to those Jews. Said that in Matthew 5:17. And he's not annulling Deuteronomy 24 either. So, here's the paraphrasing that we saw last week. Jesus did it, the apostles did it, the prophets did it. I'm going to do it again like I did last week with combined text. Here's how I interpret this passage. Some Pharisees asked, are you with Hillel or Shammai? Are you with Shammai, who believes divorce is only for fornication, or Hillel and us Pharisees, who divorce our wives for any reason at all? And he answered and said, what did Moses command? They said, Moses agrees with Hillel and us. Certificate of divorce is for any reason at all, not just sexual sin. He answered and said, haven't you ever even read Genesis 1 or 2? No, you're absolutely wrong. Moses never taught divorce for any reason at all. Genesis says that married people are no longer two but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together in marriage, you better stop separating through divorce. They said to him, why else would Moses command to give her a certificate of divorce? You fell right into our trap, Jesus. Deuteronomy 24:1 says we can divorce for any reason at all, and you're contradicting Moses. We've got you now. Jesus said, because men's hearts are hardened against an adulterous wife, Moses wrote Deuteronomy 21 and permitted you to divorce adulteresses. But from the beginning, it has never been this way of divorcing wives for any reason at all that you're defending. I say, Moses taught, whoever divorces his wife except for the nakedness stipulated in Deuteronomy 24 and listed 33 times in Leviticus, marries another woman, commits adultery. Shammai's right, you're wrong. And in the house, the disciples began to question him about this again. He said to them, whoever divorces his wife except for fornication and marries another woman, commits adultery against her. If she herself divorces her husband, except for fornication, marries another man, she's committing adultery. And the disciples said to him, if the relationship the man's with his wife's like this, it's better not to marry. He said to them, not all men can simply accept your statement, and therefore choose to live without marital sex. Only certain men have the ability to remain celibate. There are celibate men born without the desire or ability to have sex. There are celibate men who are made that way because someone castrated them. There are also celibate men who could make themselves celibate for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. Only men in these three conditions are able to remain unmarried. Let them accept your astute conclusion that it is better not to marry. There was supposed to be time for those, and there isn't. So put your hands down. Class dismissed.